Our study in the book of Genesis continues in the 31st chapter. We're ready to begin at the 19th verse. And up to this time, Jacob has now prepared to leave Haran. He's going to take his family and all of his possessions with him. And he's leaving in a secret state because his father-in-law, Laban, has turned on him. He's changed his mind about a lot of things. Jacob is now sensing that he's not as favorable to him as he was before because Jacob has been so prosperous. And we discussed in the previous lesson why Jacob was becoming prosperous. And so God has told Jacob it's time to leave, time to go back to your father's land, back to the land of Canaan. And so verses 17 and 18 say of Genesis 31, "Then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting, which he had gotten in Padan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan." Verse 19 says, and this is where our lesson really begins today, "And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's." This is an apparently minor, but nevertheless quite serious event here. It's mentioned almost in passing that Rachel, before leaving, and quite unknown to Jacob, slipped into Laban's tent and stole his images. The word here for images is teraphim, and it means that they could take these images and use them to attempt to foretell events or to discover knowledge by secret or supernatural means. We've already learned that Laban was an idolater, that he did use this means of divination. And now we see that these images were kept in his tent and Rachel has stolen them. We also learned about these images that they can simply be known as household gods, and that the law of this period recognized these household gods as deeds to the family's succession and goods. And so that makes these images very important to Laban in every way. Not only were they religious items having to do with spiritual things in the idolatrous world, but they also had to do with the literal guarantee of a title to the worldly possessions. And so it may very well be that Rachel may have stolen these items with the thought that possessing them would somehow help to validate the legitimacy of her husband's title to the flocks that he'd acquired while serving Laban. It would also represent the inheritance she had a right to expect, which she knew she was not going to get. Now that's the very best thing we can say about her stealing these idols. These idols were supposed to bring good luck to the owner. Their use was frequently found in later Israelite history, and their use was definitely idolatrous and contrary to the true faith of God. Jehovah did not allow his people to use these idols. And as we said, it's already been shown that Laban was an idolater, though he did know about Jehovah in a general way. And it's very possible that Rachel was influenced somehow by him in this regard of giving some kind of credence, some kind of special feel toward these idols. Though she trusted in Jacob's God, she also was reluctant to completely give up her previous superstitions, and she thought that taking these images along would some way help them on the long journey and in the new home to which they were going. Now that's the worst that we can say about her taking these idols. If it was simply that she was doing it because she wanted to keep her inheritance, and this was a key to that, that's one thing. But taking them along as a god, as an idol, as something to give some kind of superstition or supernatural power, that is another thing entirely. And so, if this was what Rachel was doing, then we see that her action here was very similar to that of many people today who claim to be Christians, but they want to bring over the old things of the world with them. These are idolatrous images or beliefs that have nothing to do with Christianity, that are based on some kind of supernatural or superstitious power, and that really is a form of idolatry. When we say that we're going to make a statement and knock on wood so that it'll be true, we're appealing to some kind of an authority there that is not God. When we talk about having luck, that's an authority that's not God. When we hear somebody sneeze and say, "Bless you," We're not appealing to God to help them when we say that. That comes from superstition started long ago by the apostate church. When we think of Friday the 13th as being a so-called unlucky day, or the number 13 being unlucky, or something that's going to cause bad things to happen, or the black cat or whatever, these are all superstitions that have nothing to do with the truth, nothing to do with God and what He wants His people to believe. But it's easy for us to bring these little things over, and there are hundreds of them that we use every day without even thinking about it. And so we have to be most cautious that we not be holding these things as having some kind of power, some kind of ability that God says nothing about whatsoever. Even some so-called Christian churches have these items with some kind of mystique associated with them that they use in the worship even. And that certainly is idolatry. So we must be most cautious that we not let it happen to us. The New Testament says little children flee idolatry. And remember that the very reason the Israelites were carried into captivity years later was because of idolatry. So here we see Rachel certainly leaning in that direction very strongly enough so that she stole these images that were her father's. Verses 20 and 21 say, "And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward the Mount Gilead." Jacob left before Laban knew anything about his plans. He had good reason for this, because Laban wasn't planning to let him go. He certainly didn't want him to get all of these possessions that he had earned during this 20 years of labor that he'd given him. So Jacob and his party crossed the river Euphrates. And this river is shallow enough that it can be crossed at certain points near its source, and headed for Mount Gilead, which was far to the southwest. Mount Gilead is actually a mountainous region east of the Jordan River. Its northern edges are nearly 300 miles from Haran, so a long journey stretched ahead of them. It's possible, of course, that Jacob had already worked his flocks around to the south as far as possible so as to have the advantage of a head start when he was ready to leave. And remember, there was supposed to be a 3 days journey separating him from Laban's flocks anyway, so it could have been that things were oriented just right, that his flocks may have been 80 or 90 miles on their way when the flight began in earnest. For a person who was traveling unencumbered, a day's journey would be about 30 miles. But once they begin moving the flocks along, they'd be able to make only about 15 or 20 miles a day at the most. So once they started driving the cattle, it was going to be 10 to 14 days before they could reach the Mount Gilead region. So they had a long trip ahead of them here. Verses 22 through 24 say, "And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. And he took his brother with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, Take heed that thou speak not to Jacob, either good or bad." Laban and his workers were busy with the sheep shearing. And not only with the actual work of the sheep shearing, but there was also a lot of festivities that went along with this annual event. Word did not reach them that Jacob and his family had left until they'd already been on the trail for 3 days. Laban, no doubt, was very furious, and his sons also, but they could not drop everything at the sheep shearing immediately, and evidently Jacob had already taken care of this particular chore with his animals, and it gave him quite an advantage, because while Laban was preoccupied with the work of shearing the sheep, Jacob was fleeing. And by the time they were ready to pursue Jacob and try to catch him, another day or so had already elapsed. As soon as they could leave, though, Laban and his men started the pursuit and pushed it as hard as they could. In fact, they covered the entire 300 miles in only 7 days, which shows how fast and hard they were traveling to try to catch Jacob. Laban and his sons had no intention of letting Jacob take all his flocks to Canaan, and they were resolved to take them from Jacob by whatever force was necessary. And there's also a possibility that they intended to slay Jacob if necessary to get these flocks back. They finally overtook Jacob's caravan in the mountains of Gilead, and it was probably soon after they had entered these mountains. Knowing that there was no possibility of his escaping from them now, they made camp for the night, and they wanted to be rested for whatever might be required in the next day, because the next day might be a hard day of combat in their own minds. But that night, Laban had a dream. In the dream, God spoke to him and gave him a very serious warning against doing injury to Jacob in any way. He was not even to speak to him if the conversation was going to try to threaten him or in any way try to persuade him to go back to Haran. God made it plain that Jacob was under his protection and that Jacob was following his directions. And although Laban did not know the Lord in a personal way so as to be obedient to him, he did know enough about him to know that he better do what he said. Verses 25 through 28 say, "Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the Mount Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, 'What hast thou done, that thou hast stolen away unawares to me, and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp, and had not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters? Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing.'" So the next morning, Laban got up early and overtook Jacob before his party could get underway. As they rode into camp, the atmosphere must have been very tense. No one knew what Laban was going to do. I mean, here was a man that definitely was angry. He was quite upset at what had happened. He did not want to have these possessions go with Jacob. And so it could have been a very tense and suspenseful moment. But Jacob did not doubt that God was going to be with him, and God had promised that he would protect him. Laban, on his part, was not only still angry and bitter, but he was now frustrated because God had appeared to him and barred him from carrying out his intentions. So he immediately blurted out when he met Jacob a hypocritical speech of pretended concern over Jacob's secret snatching away of his daughters and grandchildren without giving Laban the opportunity even to kiss him goodbye. He complained that he would have sent them away joyously with great festivities of music and laughter had Jacob not slipped away without anybody knowing about it. Jacob, as well as Leah and Rachel, they knew the whole story here. They all knew that Laban was lying. But Laban was afraid to say what was really on his mind in view of God's warning. Verse 29 says, "It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, Take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad." He then boasted here that he was well able to do Jacob harm, that he had the power to do what he wanted to do. But in view of his dream, he really knew this was an empty threat. Noting that his speech seemed to have produced neither fear nor sorrow in the hearts of Jacob and his daughters, he decided he better tell them exactly why it was he was not going to try to hurt Jacob, even though it was obvious from the intense way he chased after them that he had fully intended to do so. He told him of his dream and of God's warning. Verse 30 says, "And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods?" So he saw there was no point in carrying out his threat, his ability to overpower Jacob, so he changed the subject. He tried to justify his action in some manner. He told Jacob that he realized he wanted to return to his father's house and that this is a good reason for him to leave Haran. But why had he stolen his teraphim? Why had he stolen his gods? Laban was obviously now trying to excuse his pursuit of Jacob on this ground, that he really come looking for the gods. And it seems that it would hardly have been worth the cost and the trouble of such a long and difficult adventure merely to recover these little small figurines, which could have been bought much cheaper than this pursuit cost. And they would have been just as beneficial in whatever magical power Laban thought they possessed had he bought some to take their place. Laban knew Jacob well enough to know that Jacob, of all people, would not have taken his gods. And Jacob wouldn't have had nothing to do with them, even if they really did represent the inheritance right of their owner, as some people do believe. So verses 31 and 32 say, "And Jacob answered and said to Laban, Because I was afraid, for I said, Peradventure thou would take by force thy daughters from me. with whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren discern thou what is thine with me, take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. So before answering Laban's charge of theft of the teraphim, Jacob felt it good to tell Laban and all the people listening here exactly why he had left suddenly and secretly. Laban had asked the question, and even though Jacob knew that Laban knew the real answer already, perhaps there were others among the family of the servants who had not seen the full picture, Jacob said that if he had proposed to depart openly, he was afraid, and he had good reason for this, that Laban would try to take his daughters and their children back from him by force. Of course, Jacob would have fought. He would have resisted Laban had Laban tried to do this. And God would have fought for Jacob, and no telling what kind of damage might have been done. So it was far better for him to take his family and possessions away quietly with no advance notice and avoid all this confrontation. As far as Laban's images were concerned, Jacob knew nothing of them, and he was angry at the very thought. If by chance someone in his employ, someone in his family, and he had no reason to suspect anyone in his own family, least of all Rachel, his wife, if someone of them had taken them, it would embarrass him very greatly and would have given Laban a reason for chasing him. Laban could feel free to take him and exact whatever penalty the law of the time would warrant. The laws of Hammurabi, for instance, cite the theft of temple gods as a capital crime. Jacob had been very careful to see that they took nothing that really belonged to Laban. And so if Laban found anything that really belonged to him, then he would be welcome to take it back. Now here Jacob was at somewhat of a disadvantage because he was ignorant of the fact that these idols had been stolen by Rachel. Verse 33 reads, "And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tent, but he found them not. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent." So we see here that Laban proceeded to search the camp. And it's not mentioned here, but he probably searched throughout the entire caravan, but he was very definitely interested in searching Jacob's tent. Then supposing that Jacob might have hidden something in one of his wife's tents, he looked through the tents of Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah, and finally through Rachel's tent. If not the gods, he was hoping earnestly he might find something Jacob had stolen, thus giving him a justifiable reason to complain to God that his protection of Jacob was unjustified, and perhaps to justify himself in taking back all of his flocks, as he no doubt still desired to do. But verses 34 and 35 say, "Now Rachel had taken the images, and put them in the camel's furniture, and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. Then said she to her father, Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the images." Rachel had hidden the images in the saddle and basket combination used on the camel, which is called the furniture here. This was in her tent, having been placed there the previous night as they made camp. Rachel was sitting on this equipment, perhaps her skirts even hid it, as Laban entered the tent. And she excused herself for not rising by saying that she was not feeling well due to her menstrual period. This was probably a very legitimate excuse at this time, or Jacob himself might have suspected that she was concealing something. Consequently, Laban found nothing in her tent either. What Jacob would have done had Laban discovered the images in Rachel's tent, we do not know. Would he have actually handed Rachel over to Laban to be executed as he had offered? And would Laban have carried out such a penalty against his own daughter? Rachel, by what she probably thought at the time was only a little sin, had indeed placed her husband and her father and herself in a most difficult situation. She was, no doubt, fearful for her own life as well as for that of Jacob, and felt it was altogether out of the question at this point simply to confess what she had done and ask forgiveness. Her best alternative was exactly what she did. God allowed it to succeed, knowing that Jacob himself was innocent in the matter, and that his discovery would have fallen hardest of all on Jacob. Laban would have charged him with theft and lying, even though Laban knew well enough that Jacob would never have taken the images. Verses 36 and 37 say, "And Jacob was wroth, and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, What is my trespass? What is my sin, that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, What hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. So Jacob was still completely unaware of the fact that Rachel had the images, lost his temper here. He was bursting forth in a heated protest at Laban's attitudes and actions, which he had suffered in silence for so many years. All the pent-up emotion, which he had restrained for so long, poured forth in a tirade against Laban, especially as climaxed by this last thoroughly unreasonable and unwarranted charge that he'd stolen Laban's gods. He called for Laban, before all of his kinsmen and servants, to set forth exactly what the charges were, try to justify such a hot pursuit to catch him before he could reach his own home, and with what was every way rightfully his to take with him. Jacob challenged him to allow all of his kinsmen to be the judge of such charges, and to render a just verdict, and Laban could only maintain an embarrassed silence as Jacob spoke. Verses 38 and 39 and 40 say, "This 20 years have I been with thee, thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beast I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house, and I served thee 14 years for thy 2 daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. So here we see that Jacob is really unloading on Laban now. He goes back over the abuses that he's had over the 20 years and shows various things that he has done where he's actually borne the loss. He didn't charge Laban with things he could have charged Laban with, but he's borne the loss. He's worked for him day and night, and now Laban treats him like this. Well, we see here that Jacob is really in an advantageous position now to lay it on Laban, so to speak, and he gets the feelings that he's had over these years out in the open and confronts Laban with it. We must close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.